Yes, hello, this is Danhausen here, very nice for evil, and you are listening to Bob After Dark. Subscribe or be cursed.
From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows.
I'm your host with the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and alongside of me, as always, is my ever wonderful, ever vampiric, ever cape wearing, and forever the heartthrob of Bob After Dark, my friend, my brother, my producer, Count Panic himself. Oh, hey there, Count Panic.
Oh, hey, Bob. Yes, back here. Another episode of Bob After Dark through the magic of the internets, like we've never seen it before, like we'll never see it again on this episode.
What?
That was a, you know, kind of a, that could be a good slogan for Zoom. The internet as we know it.
You're an interesting vampire, you know that?
I am, Bob. I forgot. My cape, once again, is lacking. But please, if you're watching on the streams, use your imagination here. Or if you're listening on the radio, you just don't know what I'm wearing.
That's disturbing, Count.
Much like Bob. Is Bob wearing pajama pants? I don't know.
Yeah, you could. The viewers on the channels can see.
You get away with that over here too, because there's a desk. I mean,
there is a desk, yes. But then I have to still look at you in the glass, you know.
Yeah, I'm not going to judge you.
I know you wouldn't.
No.
So, Count Panic.
Hey, Bob.
Before we do anything, need to get your weekend update.
Yeah, Bob. You know, it was a hot one. It's been a wacky weather situation, right? Saturday was just blazing. It was like over 100 degrees. I had to hit up some of the local festivals there, and as myself, just walking around. But then that rain set in overnight on Saturday, and kind of we had a flood going on. Then yesterday, Bob, as you know, I don't know if you're in Whiting, but the rains fell deep and hard coming Monday.
The monsoon.
Monsoon style. I mean, what was that? Like three rounds. It was once at like 9 p.m., once at 1 a.m., and once at 3 a.m., and man, oh man, the aftermath is just something to see. They're saying it was quite the biggest storm we had here in the Northwest Indiana region in quite some time, Bob.
Historic rainfall, and I was here to witness it. So luckily, we're all good. I hope you and yours are all good.
Yeah, I was looking at Whiting too, because I know you guys had some stuff going on over there. But Hammy, Chicago, Gary, and some of the other outliers as well kind of got slammed here as far as the region.
I hope all of our listeners today are staying dry and doing the best they can getting them basements clean, because I know a lot of them are flooded out. So
how's yours? How are you doing there, Bob?
I don't have a basement.
Yeah. Go.
Not too worried about me.
Nothing on the main
floor. Our sewer lines held up pretty well, so we didn't have any standing water on my street. I'm very lucky.
No,
very fortunate.
Nothing coming in. That's very good, Bob.
Yep, very fortunate. Yeah. Very fortunate our sewer systems worked as well as they did.
We need sewer systems.
Now, would you like to know how my weekend went?
I do, Bob. How did it go?
My weekend went great.
I saw you on the roads.
Yeah, I went to Fan Expo Chicago. I spoke with Ghostly Podcast, David Voxmullen from the David Voxmullen Show. Spoke with him on the panel with Pat and Rebecca from Ghostly. We talked about the Gary Demon House story, and it was we had a good time there. So shout out to Ghostly Podcast, shout out to David Voxmullen. Had a blast hanging out with them during their panel. And then I did, with the Windy City Ghostbusters, invited me to co-host their Haunted Chicago Locations panel. Myself and Pal MJ, we tag teamed that panel, and it went really well.
There you go.
And Sunday I was in Madison at Madison's Magic City Pride.
You were making the rounds.
Making rounds.
Making towns.
Running nonstop.
Running nonstop there, Bob. You know, David, you mentioned David Voxmullen. I believe he is a local comedian as well, because he played a local theater here that I saw the show. And he also has some wrestling ties as well. It's all connected here, Bob.
Yeah, Vox is the chairman of the board of OVW and a stand-up comedian. Yeah,
Al Snow.
Yep, 100%.
Was Al Snow there?
Al Snow is not there.
Ben Colbert's a big Al Snow fan. He's in the background here. But, yeah, maybe get Al Snow on the show, Bob. We'll try to figure it out. He probably has some paranormal stories. I'll get David as well. We're here about wrestling supernatural stories.
Oh, David Vox Mullen has legitimate paranormal stories, Cal.
There you have it, Bob. I think might be a future guest here.
It might be. Will. I can make that happen.
We can make it happen through the power of Zoom. We can make it happen.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That sounds good, Bob. It sounds like a well-deserved, well-rested, but yet tiresome weekend on the, because you get tired of traveling white.
Very much. I am tired, but we are all good and ready to move on.
Yeah.
This is your first time ever watching or listening to Bob After Dark. We are your weekly show where we talk about legends, lore, and supernatural, things that go bump in the night, lights in the sky, weird cryptid stories, and, of course, Count Panic's favorite fair food to have.
Oh. Mm. I don't know. How about corn on the cob? I know people are going to expect the average thing to say is funnel cake. It's fine. But, you know, corn on the cob, that's a very summertime fair type food, I feel like. Corn on the cob.
Being from Indiana, you know exactly.
What is it?
Yeah, that's how it is. Yeah. Being from Indiana, we have the roasted corn, you know? And I'm right there with you.
At a fair, too. I think it's the ideal place to have it.
I would agree with you.
Are you going with corn, too? Corn on the cob?
Oh, corn is my favorite, I would say.
Not the deep-fried Oreo.
No, I was never a fan. Cheese curds are a second close. But
cheese curds? Yeah, because they're a fair. They put them in a bucket, don't they?
They do, yes. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
All right. So we split up the show into two parts.
We should just do an episode out about corn on the cob. And
haunted cornfields. Remind me to look into that. Maybe next week's episode.
It might be.
Might have to be next week's episode. All right. So let's dive right into the weird spooky news of the week. That's we split the show up into two parts, weird spooky news of the week and then the lore of the week. Weird spooky news of the week is where me, the fans, and you, me, the Bob, and you, the fans, go scouring the internet on the...
You, the Bob.
For anything for... Yeah, me, the Bob, goes scouring the internet for the strange and unusual... the spooky, the chaotic, the scary, anything from advances that bore us in science that borderline on science fiction, ghost stories, or just general high strangeness. I try not to use our pal Tim Banal for every episode.
Yeah, you never know.
But guess who we're crediting first?
Is it Tim?
It's our old pal, Tim Banal.
Why not credit him?
Tim Banal from Coast to Coast AM helped me keep my keeps this segment going. Sometimes I try not to abuse the using of his articles, but he's
have we ever reached out to Tim? You should get mine.
You know, someday I need to. I should reach out to Tim.
He'll be honored.
Neil from Graveside Podcast. He has an article from Tim Banal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tim Banal wrote an article about him.
That's pretty cool. But wouldn't you think all the times we mentioned Tim Banal, the guy might be able to come on. We never know.
You know what? I'm gonna reach out to Tim Banal. I literally am.
You should cut up like a montage of all the times you mentioned Tim Banal and send it to him. And he'll probably be like, wow, this guy mentioned me a lot.
Tim Banal is probably the best paranormal reporter there is out there today, breaking stories.
He's like the Peter Jennings of spooky news.
Anyway.
Dan Rather. Tom Brokaw. Walter Cronkite.
Can I move on now?
Yeah, go ahead. Okay. Those are the four ones I...
Lake Champlain Monster celebrated with a new exhibit at Vermont Museum. A new permanent exhibit at a renowned Nature and Science Museum of Vermont celebrates the legendary Lake Champlain Monster. The sizable showcase, dubbed Champ American's Lake Monster, recently opened an Echo Center in Burlington. More than a year work Reportedly went into the development and creation of a three-level exhibit that features in its centerpiece the largest and most realistic sculpture of Champ ever created. Champy. We haven't talked about Champy yet on the show, but
what is that?
Champy is essentially America's Loch Ness Monster.
That sounds familiar to me.
We haven't done an episode about Champy.
But we'll do one soon. The character sounds familiar, the creature. Yes.
Among the exhibit features Champ through the ages from monster to mascot and an enlightening interactive timeline that traces the evolution of the creature from fantastical tales spun by ancient seafarers to its present status as a beloved legend of the region. Another area of the exhibit presents guests with what is deemed to be the best evidence of the elusive cryptid, along with expert opinions on its possible existence, so that they can decide whether they are a believer or a skeptic. "We are proud of this exhibit," declared Echo's creative director, Carolyn Crawley. "We hope this experience shows visitors why Champ is our most famous animal ambassador, inspires them to support learning about Lake Champlain. At the very least, the awesome showcase deservedly elevates the legendary monster to a nearly on par with its Scottish cryptid counterpart, to which has long played second fiddle." Hashtag panic steak.
How about that? Yeah, so the second fiddle, Bob?
They say it's the second fiddle.
I don't know about that. I would say give it the first fiddle.
Real quick, Heather in chat says... Corn dog with mustard only, but
yeah, corn dog is a great fair food as well.
I'm a vegetarian, so I couldn't tell you.
Get a vegetarian corn dog.
I thought I read that it was corn on the cob with mustard only. Yeah. In which case, then
mustard.
Heather, you and I are about to have a discussion.
Yeah, but you know what? A corn dog is great because when do you usually get a corn dog? You can't really get it anywhere besides a fair, right? You don't go to a restaurant and order a corn dog. And mustard, for sure, much like the regular hot dog, you just put the mustard on and call it a day. But what were we talking about? The fiddle. Bring it out the first fiddle, Bob. Who cares about second fiddle? We're going first fiddle.
So you think Champy's going to overtake Nessie?
I think so. I think it's going to overtake Nessie.
Let's think
about that.
We'll do a special episode on Champy. We'll reach out to somebody from the museum.
I shouldn't say that because, you know, Nessie is one of my all-time favorites. So maybe I was too hard on Nessie. I apologize to Nessie right now.
Yeah, I was going to say Nessie's going to be hurt.
I know. Yeah, I was just trying to stick up for Champy there. Chappy?
Chompy? All right. I have some nightmare fuel for you for our second news.
Yeah, story. Let's hear it.
By the way, Tim Binal, shout out to Tim Binal from Coast to Coast AM.
Shout out to you.
Dagger-wielding jester arrested for allegedly threatening a landscaper.
Say that again.
Dagger-wielding jester arrested for allegedly threatening landscaper. Yeah, you heard it, okay. Right?
Yeah.
You heard me right.
Yeah.
A Florida landscaper got quite the fright when a man wearing a jester costume and wielding a foot-long dagger allegedly threatened him for making too much noise. I'm not trying to laugh because this is terrifying. I'm not laughing at the situation. It's just, oh my God.
Yeah.
The bizarre incident reportedly occurred last Thursday afternoon as Brian Hansen was mowing a lawn in St. Petersburg. His normally routine workout took a troubling, strange turn when police say a man dressed as a jester emerged from a nearby home, fetched a dagger from his car, and then began stalking towards the stunned landscaper.
Yeah.
As the angry clown, later identified as Anthony Marzola, approached the landscaper, he shouted at him about the noise he was making. Hmm. Understandably concerned, Hansen definitely maneuvered his lawnmower to shield himself from the dagger-wielding jester, who eventually returned to his house, presumably under the impression that he had gotten the message across. However, the silence that subsequently fell upon the neighborhood came about because Hansen stopped working to make a report to the police to get an incident report done. Cops arriving at the scene arrested Marzola, who they noted was wearing a full Jester costume during the incident, and at the time he was taken into custody. So he kept the Jester costume on.
Yeah. Jester costume stays on.
The menacing clown has been since charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. As for why Marzola was decked out in the odd costume on a seemingly random Thursday afternoon, it is assumed that his unusual attire was connected to his business, a smoke shop called Psychedelic Jester. Okay. Given the legal trouble he now faces, one only imagines the confrontational clown wishes that he would have gone into work instead of challenging Hansen about the noise. Hashtag panics take.
Yeah, well, this kind of gives a bad rep. Remember we talked about the clown? Remember we had the time where clowns were just causing havoc on society? But jesters were like our earliest forms of, clowns, right? I mean, would you consider them clowns? Jesters? They're clowns.
Jesters are clowns. Yeah, they're clowns. 100%.
Get bad reputation for folks like this. Trying to make an honest living being jesters and just got maniacs running around like this, Bob.
Crazy stuff. Yeah. Panic.
I don't trust it. Oh, Bob, phone is lighting up. What's the number?
All right, take the caller alive.
219-845-1100. We'll take it live there. There we go. Hey, caller.
You're on the air.
So was he charged with clowning around, Bob?
Ah. Oh, but it's John. Yeah. That was a good one.
I mean, every day you hear, every day something tops another. You know, you do. Every day you always think you heard, you know, the craziest, weirdest thing, and then something else tops that, you know? And like you said, the guy had a legitimate business going, and now it's probably...
He was just landscaping.
And that's probably it now for him since he pulled his stunt out, right? You would think?
I would be terrified at that case.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's crazy people everywhere, Bob.
Ain't it?
I'm glad we're normal. You know what I mean?
I'm telling you,
and the count are normal.
Yeah, there you go.
If the count ever went outside and approached somebody in a cape, I'm sure they wouldn't second guess it.
That's a good point too. But I kind of like I know this might not be a fair thing, but I like a good Ben's pretzel as my secondary go to at a festival or fair.
A pretzel?
Oh, what was it, John? A pretzel?
Yeah, big Ben's. Ben's pretzel.
Yeah, Ben's pretzels there. Those are good too, Bob. Have you had a Ben's pretzel?
Yeah, you can get them at like your local Meijer.
You could, but they're a staple at fairs too as well.
I guess. You know what? Yeah, you're right. You could get.
But you know what you can't get at Meijer? A corn dog.
I'm sure
you know
can
what?
Buy the freezer.
I never bought a Big Ben's at Meijer's, and I go there quite often. But good. But you know what? I also like a good slice of pizza. I mean, you know, and you could get a pizza anywhere. I know that, but I don't. You know, it's got to be pretty on the. You know, on a pretty huge size though. But I kind of like a good pizza when I go out to the fest too. So.
How about
corn dog? I don't know about a corn dog. I mean, I've never had a corn dog in a long time, but
corn the cob.
You know, but I think I would. You know, even on a corn dog, I would have to put ketchup on it, not mustard. See, so.
Heather would disagree.
But I don't want to turn this into a food network show. So
welcome to Bob After Snacks.
Yeah,
everybody.
Yeah, there you go. So I'll keep listening, and you guys have a good show.
Thanks, Sean.
All right, Bob. See ya.
Thanks, Sean. Appreciate you calling in. Did you guys know that you can also be like John and call us in? 219-845-1100. That is 219-845-1100.
How about an elephant ear, Bob?
And that would be my mom's answer, I think. An elephant ear or funnel cake.
How about the turkey drumstick?
If you're at the Ren Fair, you know, you get the big honking size ones.
You could do that. And how about
not me, but
Lemonade, but that's a beverage. Lemonade's a good thing at the fair too. Corn to cob and a lemonade, you can't.
If they're legitimately giving you lemonade, you know how many times I've ordered lemonade and it's freshly squeezed, but they're just pouring Minute Maid in.
Then they charge you bonus
like
for
20.
It.
But yeah, they charge you handmade lemonade price for Minute Maid. I've been there before,
and I'm willing to bet Chuck Pullen, if he's listening, his favorite cotton candy.
They had cotton candy at the show I was at this past week.
Did you get any cotton candy?
I'm not a cotton candy person. It coats my teeth.
It's a really strange material, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm not a fan.
Texture is kind of, it's like yarn. Not yarn, but like a wool, right? You know what I'm saying here.
Welcome to Bob After Snacks, everybody.
All right, continue on, Bob.
All right, you ready for our last news story?
Yeah.
All right, so we have a rare black moon to rise this week and what to know about the phenomenon. This is written by The Hill, and this comes from Nexstar. Just a few weeks after twin meteor showers passed overhead, there's been another astronomical phenomenon set to occur, a black moon. Rising August 23rd, the black moon won't be eye-catching as other celestial events this month. The fact you won't be able to see the moon at all. But its rarity making it fascinating, according to space.com. While it's not an official astronomical term, black moon is used to describe unusual timings of new moon phases. To understand it better, it may help to think about the blue moon of the once in the blue moon fame. The phrase references the rare extreme full moon that happens every 2.5 years, according to NASA. Because the moon cycle is 29.5 days, slightly less than the average month, eventually a full moon will fall on the first or second day of the month, allowing for another full moon to occur just before the month ends. What's up, Companic?
I was saying, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So conversely, a black moon refers to the new moon phase, or as NASA puts it, the invisible phase, when the moon rises with the sun, but it is positioned between the Earth and the sun. The illuminated side of the moon is opposite the Earth, making it impossible to see. A black moon also happens to due to the gap between the lunar cycle and the average length of the calendar month. And that's our story. So this black moon will be rising on September 23rd and marks the third new moon cycle of the 2025 summer season.
So, and you know, we always get some kind of type of moon that we always got to go stand outside and watch. Doesn't it seem like that? This is the rarest moon you're ever going to see, but yeah, we see other rare moons as well. But this one's supposed to kind of mirror off the sun a little bit there. Is that what I'm getting at here?
Yeah.
So what happens when that happens? What it's should we be?
It's like a new moon. It's just where the sun, where the shadow covers the moon, but this one's going to be like completely invisible.
Should we take cover or?
Well, I mean, you're still going to be fine. It's just going to be dark.
Yeah. I mean, is there a reason to be? I mean, should we be alarmed about this? Or is this just something that's cool to look at?
Something cool to look at. It's
all right. Do I have to wear glasses like the sun when you had that?
No,
stare
you
at
don't
the sun.
Have to worry about that.
No, did you do that by the way when that came around? Were you around when that?
Yeah, that's the day my appendix burst.
That was the same day last year.
Same day last year.
Wow.
My appendix didn't burst. It started swelling and then leaking when I was at the hospital.
Right when the sun was the full eclipse, the total eclipse.
The full eclipse. And then I'm Dan Aykroyd and my appendix just.
What a day for you.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah.
Because I met Dan Aykroyd and hung out with him that night, and that was the whole thing.
Hey. Yeah. I don't mean to bring up bad memories here.
That's okay.
Yeah. Well, the sun, you know what? That's September 22nd, you said? 26th? 22nd?
26.
26. All right.
20. Yes. All right.
Keep an eye out for that.
You ready to take a quick break?
Sure.
Don't panic.
Yeah.
All right. To our live fans, we'll be right back. And to our podcast fans, stick around. You're about to be hearing word from a podcast that you should be listening to. Stay tuned.
This is Mike.
This is Jacob.
And this is Matt.
We are Moth Boys,
a podcast on cryptids, conspiracies, and the unknown. You can catch us every other Monday on, actually, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Thank you.
And we're back. Oh, hey there,
Compan. Oh, hey there, Bob.
How's it going, Compan?
Pretty good. Yourself?
Going good. What'd you do during break?
During break, Bob, I went to every single county fair in this world and ate a corn on the cob.
That's a lot of corn.
That's a lot of fairs, and that's a lot of corn. A lot of cob.
There's a lot of corn on the cob.
Yeah.
I went to Count Panic Fest.
There's a Count Panic Fest?
Apparently you weren't there.
I wasn't there. A bunch of
people dressed in black capes.
Ah, we should start
and
that.
You know what they had? They had deep fried funnel cake.
Deep fried funnel cake. It's kind of already fried, but it's deep fried this time. That's amazing, there, Bob.
Sorry, I panicked there. I didn't know what else. I was gonna say
it's deep fried.
I was gonna say deep fried Kool-Aid.
Oh. Deep fried lemonade. We just talked about lemonade.
Yeah, like a deep fried lemonade. That's what I was thinking. How does that work?
This one time they advertise this iced hot chocolate. It's hot chocolate.
I've had it. It's essentially a milkshake.
Yeah, dude. But why do they call it that?
I mean, because it's not like hot chocolate. It's like they freeze hot chocolate, so it's a little different. Yeah.
How about hot lemonade? Here's your 95 degree hot lemonade. Drink it up. But Count Panic Fest. I mean, I can't have a fest before Bob Fest. There's got to be a Bob Fest first. Then we get a Count Panic Fest.
You know, it's funny you say that. October 18th is building up to becoming a thing.
Are you calling it Bob Fest?
Oh, God, no. sometimes scaring is caring fest, but we're not talking about that
we'll talk about that, but like what about like a Bob Fest where people, you know, cosplayers dress up as Bob and everybody's dressed up as Bob and it's BobCon. We mentioned BobCon.
Oh my word.
And you can only go if your name is Bob. They check your ID at the door.
Like all seven people want to show up to that?
No, there's Bob has to be one of the most popular names, right?
Well, yeah, but how many Bobs listen to my show?
I'm sure a lot of Bobs. If you're a Bob, let us know.
Yeah, shoot me an email. Is your name Bob too, and you listen to the show?
We should have a show where we just find three guys named Bob and you talk to them.
My three Bobs, that's what we'll call it.
Well, you're the fourth Bob. I mean, I guess, yeah, but they're your three Bobs. So, like, it's you, Bob, the host, and three guests named Bob. And we just talked to three guys named Bob, and everybody's saying, I agree, Bob. Bob, I agree too, Bob. Bob, that's correct, Bob. How you doing, Bob?
Oh, my word.
I'm full of good ideas tonight.
All right. You ready to dive into the lore of the week?
Sure. You don't like my Bob Fest idea. We'll go to lore of the week.
BobCon is the name of what I want to name my funeral.
BobCon. Are people going to dress up as you at your funeral?
Yeah, I want people to cosplay instead of vendors and all that jazz.
Yeah, have hot lemonade, cheese curds.
Hot lemonade? That's so gross.
Well, if we've got a cold hot chocolate, we could have
hot lemonade.
Hot cold lemonade. Yeah.
Nah, man, I'm good.
Think about
lemonade it. Lemonade needs to be ice cold.
Excuse
my yawning.
Yeah,
folks.
Well, it is Bob After Dark.
No, I know that, but I have no reason to be sleepy. Yawning.
No,
I haven't been sleeping good the past few nights. So
that's all
those
storms, too.
Folks.
Yeah, storms keep you up at night.
Yeah. All right, you ready to dive into the lore of the week?
Sure, let's go ahead.
Okay, stop me if you've heard this one before.
All right.
You're driving down a lonely path when all of a sudden you see a woman dressed in white.
Ah, stop. Yeah. I've heard this before, right?
You've had to have.
I know. It's famous.
Okay. And you pick up the woman in white, and she's in your car, and she just suddenly disappears.
Where did she go?
Somewhere. If you look at the story of Resurrection Mary, he dropped her off in front of the Resurrection Cemetery's gates. Other times, some other stories have these phantom hitchhikers get picked up and dropped off at bars or just vanish out of the car in general.
Yeah. I mean, that's a common trope. I mean, Resurrection Mary has to probably be the biggest one, though, as far as that story goes. Locally here, even more locally than Resurrection Cemetery, you know, we've talked about it before.
The
did a segment,
the
Peak Rice.
Yeah, the Rita Road, Blue Mist, Rita Road.
Yeah, Rita Road, right there in Griffith, Indiana.
And then the Klein Avenue Woman of the
Klein
Blue
Avenue
Mist.
Blue Mist. So two occasions there of local lore.
Exactly. Besides Resurrection Mary. Did you know that this lore actually has a name?
What's it called?
It's called the Vanishing Hitchhiker Legend.
The Vanishing Hitchhiker Legend. Because locally here, that's a big deal. I mean, that's three stories right locally right there we just mentioned. And I'm sure throughout the country, there's got to be a lot of
it. It's a phenomenon around the world.
Around the world.
So tonight I have a couple articles I'm going to read for you that's going to talk about the Vanishing Hitchhiker Legend. Hmm. The first one's written by Mark Hay, and it's on Atlas Obscura, which is like my favorite website. Check out Atlas Obscura. Oh. The Vanishing Hitchhiker Legend is an ancient tale that keeps evolving. The classic creepy story, a driver offers a lift to a stranger who is not of this world, has deep roots and a long reach. Drive through the suburb of Chicago suburb of Willow Springs late at night, and local lore says that you might see a forlorn young woman in a white dress on the side of the road. If you take pity and ask if she needs a ride, she'll quietly accept. She's soft-spoken. She won't say much, save that she's headed your way. Then, a couple miles down the road, she'll ask you to let her out, just as you pass the gates of Resurrection Catholic Cemetery. Mm. You may well turn around confused to ask if this really is her stop, only to find that she vanished. Many Midwesterners likely know a version of the story of Resurrection Mary. It is one of the region's most famous and enduring ghosts. But Mary is just one of dozens of vanishing hitchhikers who have supposedly haunted the roads of the United States and beyond. There's the hitchhiking Los Angeles woman in white who has to get out of the cemetery and vanishes. Or the cackling flannel-clad redhead with narrow eyes in rural Massachusetts but vanishes in the back seat. Or the man looking for the lift on a lonely stretch of South Carolina Road only to vanish when the car passes the site of the 50s prop plane crash. Mm. Vanishing hitchhiker legends are so interesting that there is an eerie subfield of folklore research going back more than 80 years dedicated to the tracking and unpacking them. What's more, these tales are likely modern incarnations of much more older legends as they continue to spread and evolve. Accounts of Resurrection Mary and a handful of other vanishing hitchhikers started making the rounds in the 1930s. There was no compendium for these legends at the time, so as folklorists encountered the one version, they treated it like a unique local tale. Perhaps one born of a memory of a nasty early auto accident and the anxieties about the proliferation of automobiles. Mm. Then, Richard K. Birdsley and Rosalie Hinkey, students at the University of California, Berkeley, went digging. The pair searched for records of car accidents that could have inspired the version they heard. They came up empty, but they did discover similar yet distinctly local tales throughout the state. One of these people they interviewed, a businessman based in San Francisco, mentioned of hearing in other versions of Chicago and Salt Lake City. Beardsley and Hinkey reached out to other contacts nationwide, and within 2 months, they had a collection of 80 distinct tales from New York to Hawaii. They never found a clearer story, the version of which all the others evolved, so, you know, an origin story. But the research, published in 1942 in an inaugural issue of the Journal of California Folklore Quarterly, uncovered several curious aspects of the legend and coined the term the Vanishing Hitchhiker. While each version of the story was hyper-local, naming specific era roads, dance halls, and other landmarks. Overall, they could be broken into four broad categories. A hitchhiker who simply vanishes en route to the given address. A young woman picked up at a social event who leaves behind a token, such as a scarf or a coat. A wayfarer who predicts a disaster before disappearing. Or, unique to Hawaii, a hitcher that turns out to be the goddess Pele, who goes to reward the people who offer aid and punish those who ignored her. The two students also found parallels with much older European lore, including stories about spirits who died, spirits of those who died unexpectedly and were trying to make their way home. Almost by accident, Beardsley and Hankey had conducted the first systematic study of modern legend. Their initial findings tantalized other scholars who had saw other documenting the vanishing hitchhiker could serve as a case study for a new approach to understanding folklore's evolve. The renowned folklorist, Lewis C. Jones, became convinced that if we could fathom the total history of the one story, its origins, its periods of quiescence and activity, its borrowings and lendings, its mutations and constants, its sensitivities to world events, we would have to answer so many of these riddles folk culture. They can trace back to ancient Roman tales of ghosts disappearing, dispensing wisdom on roadways. In 1944, Jones confirmed the connection between the vanishing hitchhikers and older European ghost lore, tracing them back to the stories of the ghost riders brought to the U.S. by 19th century immigrants. In these tales, spectral women leaped on the men's horses as they rode to parties and then disappeared as they arrived. Birmingham University folklorist Elizabeth Tucker adds to those clearly eerie tales, since they've been tracked down medieval legends about wandering, vanishing saints, which would may in turn echo ancient Romans of ghosts disappearing, dispensing wisdom on roadways. While road names and other details vary, every legend in this lineage taps into the underlying concept, the liminality of roads. It's easy to find not just what we're moving from point A to point B, Tucker says, but maybe also between worlds, encountering unfamiliar and unexpected sights and strangers. The vanishing hitchhiker legends simply update the concept to reflect hard dominated roads and the uniquely unnerving feeling of driving alone on empty roads. Driving at night can be spooky, says Haley Stevens, who investigates paranormal phenomena for a science-based perspective. A smaller field of vision, not knowing what's around, feeling tired towards the end of the day. These are all ingredients for a scenario in which something quite unordinary or could be interpreted as something terrifying. You good so far?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's common questions always people have is like, well, why is she always wearing white, right? I mean, just common what she was wearing. She was never wearing green or yellow. It was always white. Plus, it was always at night as well. You never pick up a hitchhiker during the day. Were there any sightings during the day with any of these folks there, any of these ladies?
Not to my research. No,
not to your research. It's all at night because, as you just mentioned, the night is spookier. Pick it. And hitchhikers during the day, it's not as a fun story.
All right. So the legend evolves not only to reflect changes in how we travel, but to adapt to new cultures and concerns. In the 50s, Utah folklorist William A. Wilson recorded tales of prolific hitchhikers who urged Mormon drivers to participate in church-backed food stockpiling program. And in the American South, otherworldly hitchhikers took on characteristics like La Llorona, the famous sweeping ghost of Mexican folklore.
Saw the movie on that.
Mm-hmm. These stories, like all ghost lore, convey subtle morality lessons, say the folklorists who study them. But the moral of the vanishing hitchhiker legends also seems to shift as it spreads across time and cultures. Many Hawaiian versions emphasize the importance of aiding of those in need, but that flannel-clad man in rural Massachusetts who sits cackling behind a driver, growing louder and more maniacal until he vanishes, reminds listeners of the dangers of trusting strangers too easily. researchers have found that the ghost lore seems to endure when it's connected to something familiar and concrete, a known figure or landmark, a verifiable tragedy or death. A story about a particular stretch of road, for instance, invites people to recount, embellish, and thus perpetuate it whenever they hit that treacherous turn. And while it's often very hard to verify the alleged death referenced in the hitchhiker tale, car crashes and other accidents are not as uncommon. Being able to find that at least a plausible connection to one of those real-life tragedies, a young woman who died in circumstances similar to those of Resurrection Mary, for example, make the legend seem more authentic. Ghost lore seems to endure when it's connected to something familiar. But the most fascinating aspect of the Vanishing Hitchhiker for many researchers is truly global adaptability. In the mid-1950s, on the heels of the Korean War, a variant of the tale appeared in South Korea, which did not have strong car culture at the time. Soon after, versions popped up in East Africa, which had little cultural connection to urban legends in the U.S. In the 21st century, folklorists have documented the legend popping up in Romania, China, northeastern India, and even remotely isolated Bhutan. While the globalization of American pop culture may explain some of the legend's international spread, it tends to persist only in cultures that have already some tradition of ghost lore. The legend also typically takes hold in the society going through a period of social change and uncertainty. Folklorist Margaret Lido of East Estonia University of Tartu found that the Vanishing Hitchhiker's tale spread in the Indian city of Shillong along rapid urbanization. There, she says, highways and traffic become focal points for broad anxieties and changes in some structures, cultural norms, and sense of safety, just as they were in 1930s America. There's one difference, however. Shillong has no history of hitchhiking, so the legend evolved there about a cab driver's picking up supernatural passengers. In 2021, professional skeptic Deborah Hyde wrote that a Vanishing Hitchhikers might be on the decline. Hitchhiking is far less common than it once was. Safer roads and vehicles and greater connectivity have made driving at night less of a journey to the liminal. Some folklorists haven't identified new iterations of old legends for years, at least here in the U.S., but there is another reason the legend may be fading here. It's just simply too well known. Since the 40s, the Vanishing Hitchhiker legend turned up in radio plays, TV shows such as The Twilight Zone, indie horror movies, reality shows, and even video games. The motif's ability to make the actual stories, even when the other one told over a campfire or whispered on a late night road trip, seemed contrived. However, folklorists, including Lido and Tucker, believe the legend is too far flexible to fade away, even in the U.S., where the Vanishing Hitchhiker is almost a cliche. Tucker believes that there's still a deep fascination with eerie, empty roads and the supposed potential for paranormal encounters on them. There's also a hunger for frameworks to contextualize unnerving experiences that many of us had. And there's more willingness to talk openly about those experiences. In fact, Tucker says she's noticed fewer secondhand and more purported first-hand accounts of roadside ghost encounters recently. Though they're often just about specters standing on the shoulder of a highway, then just vanishing rather than picking up any woman, young woman in white. Tucker adds that that these newer stories can be found on social media and YouTube rather than local newspapers and chatter. As we live in more and online, more and more online, our ghosts do too. So what do you think so far, Calvin?
Yeah, and another thing, too, you watch these classic tales about the women in white there. You don't get any like modern ones, right? They are all from like a long time ago, but none from dating back to like 2018 or anything like that. Like, I guess it's with any ghost story. All ghost stories have pretty much a sense of history behind them, depending on who you're talking about there. But not a lot of modern ones popping up, I feel, Bob. They all have some kind of, you know, what did you say, at least, I don't know, at least 50 years old at this point? Older than that for sure, but not a lot of modern ones. To my knowledge. I don't know if you have any.
I mean, no.
No.
How many, like they were saying, how often are, do you see the hitchhikers anymore?
You don't see the hitchhikers at all, Bob. And we got a phone call, 219-845-1100. We'll take it live.
Yep, take it live.
Take it live there.
Call, you're on the air.
Oh, well, good evening, guys. I'm just checking in.
Hey, Bill.
How you doing, Bob and Count? Everything good?
Everything's going okay. How about you, Bill?
Well, I haven't had any encounters with hitchhikers, although I think a long time ago, sounds like the date I went on to, you know, I went out with, but other than that, so I don't know what happened. Well, you know, because I've been to Resurrection Cemetery. You know, we had some relatives, and they were showing us around, and we're, you know, Resurrection Harry is. You know, they showed us the grave of that.
Sure.
That was interesting. I mean, you know, but
did you see anything out there, Bill? Did you see any hitchhiking ghost?
No, I didn't.
No.
Well, this was during the afternoon.
Well, they don't come out in the afternoon.
I know that.
Yeah, it's only at night.
It's only at night.
You know, so like I said, I've heard those stories. That I think there was one on the Twilight Zone where the guy picked this girl up at a dance, and then he took her home, and she went in front of her house, and then she got out of the car. And then I guess she left her jacket or purse or something, and the guy came back and he knocked on the door, and her mom answered, and he said, you know, I forgot what the girl, you know, she left her jacket, and I guess it was like a year's anniversary that she was killed in a car crash.
Mm, yeah. Yep, that's a common theme in all those stories, Bill.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I get into that stuff, and then you guys were making me hungry talking about carnival food, but
yeah, where are you going with, Bill?
Well, I'm going with the corn dog and the elephant ears.
Corn dog and elephant ears. There you go, Bob. Good choices. Yeah. Good combo.
So, all right, listen, I'll let you guys go. Like I say, just checking in. I heard John, so I had a call. You know,
of course, always appreciate it, Bill.
Thanks for calling in, right, Bill.
You guys take care.
You too.
You too, Bill.
Take care. Bill going with the corn dog elephant ear combo.
So I want to read a couple of these vanishing hitchhiking stories. Yeah. One of the most local ones is the Woman of the Blue Mist on Klein Avenue.
That's a big one here.
It is a big one. My father used to tell me this story, and he even, like, my father is a straight shooter. He was not a believer whatsoever,
no.
But he swore the night that he was going to, because my dad would drive up and down Klein Avenue for work because he worked at the mill.
Yeah.
So he would have to pick up his test in one thing and drop it off at the other mill. It wasn't uncommon to find people hitchhiking or walking up and down Klein because of the casinos.
Yeah, of course. Had the gamble.
And if somebody's car broke down or whatever. So my dad always said he would see somebody walking, you know, sometimes he'd see them. And he said the one time he saw a young woman out there with a shopping bag, he pulled over in his work truck because he was going to try to get her to safety, because being also out there at night isn't the most safest neighborhood. And he was going to say, hey, you know, lady, I'm working right now. Can I get you some help? And he swore that when he did that, she just vanished. And last year, I don't know if you remember, a gentleman at the library we spoke at in Highland mentioned the same thing. But
I
he
do.
Said that the woman in the woman would turn into a blue mist. Mm-hmm. And that's an old steelworker's tale at the around like what are not LTV, I'm sorry, ArcelorMittal or whatever it's BP? Called these days, BP and U.S. Steel.
Yeah.
So that's the old tale for those who work midnights that would be happening to drive up and down. They'd see the woman with the shopping bag that would turn into blue mist.
Yeah. I mean, it's eerie, right? You think your eyes are deceiving you. You think, well, geez, I didn't have anything to drink tonight. Why am I seeing this woman just vanish or turn to blue mist? It's got to be pretty eerie. But with your dad, they never got actually in the car, right? They just vanished in front of him?
No, he said she vanished right in front of him.
Because a lot of times the stories are they're going to get in the car and then they drive a little bit. And then
yeah,
they vanish.
He said she just poofed away.
Yeah.
And he thought that what he saw that night, he thought he was seeing things. But yeah, that was one of the stories. And lo and behold, when that gentleman told us when he worked at the steel mill, the woman on Klein, and I'm like, you know, it's funny you say that because I remember I thought my dad was just telling me that as a, you know, father telling a ghost story to the kid.
Why would he tell you that?
Exactly.
Exactly. So yeah, that's a big one around here for sure.
So I'm going to read a couple ghost stories that were put together by a WordPress website called Molto Ghost. Molto Ghost. It's got a lot of interesting blog posts on there. I'll have a link below. You guys can go check that out. They have an amazing write-up on what the Vanishing Hitchhiker is and some of the different versions of the story. I'm going to tell you guys one that was collected in 1912. A man was on his horse and buggy late at night, riding through a region he didn't know in search of an inn. As he passed an oak grove, he saw a young woman in white, old-fashioned dress by the road. He stopped and asked if she needed help. In a low, sweet voice, she said that she had been left alone in the grove and wanted to be taken home. Of course, the man agreed, and as he helped her into the buggy, which was difficult, since his horse had been skittish since the moment they encountered the woman, he marveled at how light she was. He also noticed a dark stain on her dress. A few miles up the road, they came to a ruined old mansion with crumbling columns gleaming coldly in the moonlight. This, the woman said, was her home. As she floated up the front stairs into the ruins, the moon illuminated the stain on her dress, and it was blood. And at this point, the horse had enough and tore down the roadway until they came to an inn. The innkeeper told the traveler that he'd picked up the neighborhood ghost, a girl who had been murdered by her lover at midnight in the oak grove, and many years before, and on moonlit nights, she appeared looking for a ride back to her home, now long abandoned and in ruin.
Classic tale, Bob. Classic case to me.
Yes. There is also the concept of the prophesizing passenger. This was common in the 30s and 40s, but instead of a hitchhiker popping in and, you know, asking for a ride, the hitchhiker will just appear in the car, say something incredibly prolific, and then just disappear.
Really? So it's inspirational.
No, usually prophesizing something bad.
Oh, okay. Like any examples are?
No.
Don't eat the cheese curds or something like that.
Usually it was a warning of some kind of other dangerous entity, you know?
Yeah.
Like it could be warning of incoming doom.
Nobody wants that.
No.
Don't pick up that hitchhiker. Pick
up the hitchhiker. What do you think of the Vanishing Hitchhiker story?
I was going to say, pick up a hitchhiker at least tells you good stuff or something like that. Or better yet, a hitchhiker that will help you get your way home when your GPS doesn't work or you don't have a map on you. But the Vanishing Hitchhiker, always a fascinating story. So many variations of it. Usually, of course, the woman and the woman in white around here. Of course, a number of them. But yeah, I mean, if you're out there driving, usually at night, see a woman in white. Best the good chances, Bob. She's gonna vanish.
I would say so.
She's gonna vanish on you.
Do you have any closing words for our audience this evening?
Watch out for hitchhikers.
You never know when one might be a ghost.
Yeah.
Folks, thanks for watching and listening to another episode of Bob After Dark. To my mom, I just want to wish you sweet dreams. My dad, wherever you are in the universe, I hope you're happy, comfortable doing whatever it is that you want to be doing. And to Tiff, have the sweetest dreams of them all. Good night, everybody. And remember, the two most important rules of Bob After Dark are: not all who wander are lost, and as above, so below. Till next time.
Memoriam Development.